The readings for the 22nd Sunday after Pentecost are Genesis chapter 32, verses 22 to 31, the Gospel of Luke chapter 18, verses 1 through 8, and the poem Touched by an Angel by poet Maya Angelou. Grace to you and peace from God our Creator and Christ our Wisdom. Amen. I am not a fan of wrestling. Neither amateur nor professional. Maybe you were on a high school or a college wrestling team, or maybe you enjoy watching the competitions in the Summer Olympics. And there's nothing wrong with wrestling. I'm just not a fan. Although I do have a hard time with the macho theatrics of professional wrestlers, and sumo wrestling is just beyond me. So why would a story about wrestling be one of my favorite Bible passages? Especially since the story of Jacob wrestling with someone at the Jabbok River, it's obviously an ancient tribal legend, part of the oral tradition that would explain or validate the sacredness of a particular place or shrine, such as Bethel or Peniel. It would seem to be a folk legend best left back in the mists of time. But as I wrote in Keeping in Touch, this is a fine example of the I don't know if it happened this way, but I know it's true art of biblical storytelling. What began as a tribal legend now serves as an archetypal tale about a common spiritual reality. And like the theme of exile from last week, wrestling, the spiritual kind, is another one of those universal experiences that, unlike amateur and professional wrestling, appear in the psyches of people the world over. But let's go back to the story for just a bit. Who is this opponent who jumps all over Jacob like Hulk Hogan as he slept? We have to remember what brought Jacob to be camping out all by himself by the river in the first place. Someone once said that all the families in the Old Testament were dysfunctional, and that's certainly true of this one. The relationship between Jacob and his twin brother Esau was one of deep-seated hostility, stemming from the fact that their parents, Isaac and Rebekah, had played favorites. Isaac favored Esau, while Jacob was his mother's favorite. The sibling rivalry became treacherous when Jacob cheated firstborn Esau out of his family birthright, which had entitled him to a double share of the family inheritance. Then he also swindled the family blessing from his blind and dying father. When Esau threatened to kill him, Jacob fled to his uncle Laban in Haran, and there he married his cousins Rachel and Leah, and eventually fathered 13 children with them and their two slaves. Eventually, though, Jacob got tired of his father-in-law's manipulations and took off with his family and all of their possessions. He sent word to Esau that he was on his way home, and that he had a caravan of gifts with him, maybe as an incentive for Esau to spare his life. When they came to the river, Jacob sent the women and children on across the Jabbok and hunkered down for the night. I can imagine the scene. Physically exhausted, deeply anxious about Esau, alone in the desert without any of his worldly possessions, powerless to control his fate, with Laban behind him and Esau in front of him, Jacob was too tired to struggle any longer, and he finally collapses into deep sleep. But then is when his real struggle begins. That night, someone visited Jacob, and they wrestled through the night until daybreak. But who was this someone? In the New Revised Standard Version of the Bible, as well as King James Version, Jacob's wrestling partner is referred to simply as a man. Tradition has called this mysterious stranger an angel, or God in human form. In other words, an encounter with the divine. not the comforting presence that we so often crave, but a terrifying physical, emotional, spiritual challenge to submit to a power greater than oneself. Author Frederick Buechner calls Jacob's divine encounter at Jabbok the magnificent defeat of the human soul at the hands of God. I think I would have said the magnificent defeat of the human ego. In any event, it doesn't sound like real good news, does it? I mean, who wants to be, dare I say it, a loser? Yet it's finally in defeat that Jacob is blessed. He sheds his identity as a cheater and is transformed into a new identity that will be able to be a blessing far beyond what he ever could have imagined. I wonder how many of us have encountered such a life-changing presence. I can recall in my early days at seminary being challenged by new ways of thinking and believing, and also coming to terms with my own dysfunctional family and how it had shaped my view of the world and of God. And this wasn't a sudden one-night wrestling with God down by the river, but it was a process of transformation into a new way of being. And I remember describing it at the time as feeling like my insides were being rearranged. It really was almost that physical. In keeping in touch, I also wrote about my search for an image to go with this theme today, and I was drawn to the sculpture Jacob wrestling with the angel because of its physicality, which to me embodied the tough struggle that spirituality can sometimes be. In the artist's description of it, she says, "We often have to wrestle with God to admit the truth about ourselves." In her book, Scarred by Struggle, Transformed by Hope, Sister Joan Chittister uses the Jacob story as a paradigm for a spirituality of struggle. And she begins the book with her own story, and so we discover that this isn't an abstract theological treatise. This is a personal reflection. And in Jacob's story, she identifies eight elements of our human struggle: change, isolation, darkness, fear, powerlessness, vulnerability, exhaustion, and scarring. Oh yeah, I can relate. I bet you can too. But, she says, with each human struggle, there's a corresponding divine gift: conversion, independence, faith, courage, surrender, limitations, endurance, and transformation. She writes, "Jacob does what all of us must do if in the end we too are to become true. He confronts in himself the things that are wounding him, admits his limitations, accepts his situation, rejoins the world, and moves on. The end result of this struggle for this cheater and liar was God's blessing." Another book, and I'm indebted to Pastor Dawn Hutchings from Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Newmark, Ontario, for the lead to this one. This is entitled Sacred Therapy and was written by a Jewish psychologist named Estelle Frankel. The subtitle of the book is Jewish Spiritual Teachings on Emotional Healing and Inner Wholeness. Dr. Frankel writes, "For the Hasidic masters, the entire cast of biblical characters lives within each of us, representing dimensions of each of our souls. As a psychotherapist who has spent the past 30 years immersed in the study of Jewish myths and metaphors, I've learned that when we go beyond our personal predicaments and locate ourselves within the larger story, we open the doors to the sacred dimension and our lives become pregnant with meaning. Living embodiment of Torah. We come to experience our lives as resonant with a much greater matrix of meaning in which any transition we undergo, be it a death, divorce, illness, or disability, may initiate us into the larger mysteries of life. As we find reflections of our individual lives in sacred myths, we tend to feel less alone in our suffering. We no longer see our personal struggles as simply personal. Instead, we see them as mirrors of sacred processes that occur at all levels of creation at all times. By locating ourselves in the crucible of the great myth, we are guided on a journey of transformation. Now, in the Inclusive Bible, that is the version that we use most often here, they had a similar take on the universal meaning of this story. In this translation that we read today, Jacob's wrestling partner is referred to as simply someone. And a footnote in the Bible explains it this way. The Hebrew in the passage is almost completely lacking in proper names. Each line of dialogue begins, "And he said," without any indication of who's speaking, a dizzying construction which gives the reader the idea that Jacob and the other are mirror images of one another. Jacob is in effect wrestling with himself, or figuratively wrestling with his twin Esau, whom he's about to confront. Indeed, in the chapter following this passage, Jacob says of Esau, "Seeing your face is like seeing the face of God." So if Estelle Frankel is right, we can begin to see ourselves in this sacred story of Jacob. And then perhaps we can begin to see that our wrestling partner is indeed our very selves. For what are we if not reflections of the divine? And what are our brothers and sisters if not also reflections of the divine? I'm going to take a wild guess here and say that each and every one of us has some kind of struggle, past or present, and we'll have more of them in the future. And what we can learn from Jacob, along with his epic wrestling match, is his persistence in obtaining a blessing from the experience. Like the widow in the gospel story who won her case by her unflagging tenacity, we too are emboldened to demand a blessing, even though, like Jacob, we have to realize that we might walk away from the experience with a limp or a bruised ego. Yet in our magnificent defeat, we're transformed to be a blessing far beyond what we can imagine. Locating ourselves in this sacred struggle, we can begin then to see reflections of our world struggle as various branches of the family, human family, wrestle with one another. Maybe this blessing can nourish us as we make our presence known to our fellow wrestlers, if only to remind us that we're all in this together, and that in the end, that it is something greater than ourselves that will bring us that for which we truly long. I chose the Maya Angelou poem for today because it seemed to me to express what Jacob and we might feel after a time of such intense spiritual wrestling. Yet if we are bold, love strikes away the chains of fear from our souls. We are weaned from our timidity. In the flush of love's light, we dare to be brave. And suddenly we see that love costs all we are and will ever be. Yet it is only love which sets us free. Amen.